GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1142, August 24, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Winchester, Virginia. Had to think there for a second. Let's see. I think the last podcast I put up Thursday evening, recorded at Toledo, Ohio. And then so Friday, if I'm thinking correctly, Friday afternoon I went to Bowling Green, Ohio, and to pick up a load that was going to Pennsylvania. Now, I got to Bowling Green. I think the load was supposed to load at 3 p.m. Friday afternoon. At least that's when Qualcomm said. So I got there probably about 2 o'clock, something like that, 2:15, somewhere around in there. And it was 8 o'clock, at least 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, before I got out of there. And so since I started my day, I think I started my day at 2:15 p.m. Central Time. Of course, it had to end by 4:15 a.m. Central Time. Saturday morning. And so that kind of, you know, made it impossible for me to get to where I was going. So what ended up having to happen, I made it to Bedford, Pennsylvania. And so, I made it there, and so I was lucky enough to find a place to park. And so in the meantime, I had let the dispatchers know that, hey, not going to make it. They kept me too. They took them too long at the shipper. Took them way too long, and so that what they had to do, Saturday morning, they found some driver to come and had an empty trailer that to come and swap out with me, and then take that and deliver it. I think it was it going to Hanover, someplace in South Central Pennsylvania. Can't remember right off the top of my head right now, but so anyway, the guy came. That was Saturday morning. He got there, I don't know, it was probably about, 9 o'clock something or other, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning, and so then after that, he swapped and I got the empty trailer. And so to make a long story short, I ended up sleeping a good chunk of the day away Saturday because I'd driven until about 3:45 a.m. In the morning. So I ended up sleeping a good chunk of the day away Saturday. And then so Saturday evening, I ended up kind of listening to some stuff and watching a bunch of different video podcasts that I downloaded on my computer, a lot of the TED videos. And then woke up, I guess the Qualcomm went off. I had the volume turned up on it so I'd hear it. It went off around 8:30 this morning. And so they had offered a load that picked up here at Winchester, Virginia, that delivers, I think it's going to Franklin, Indiana. And it delivers there, it would be Tuesday. I think it's probably a drop and hook, but it delivers there by Tuesday morning. And so I ended up driving up here, I guess it was around 4 something when I left. It might have been a bit earlier than that. Whenever I left Bedford, then I went over to, after I left Bedford, Pennsylvania, then I went over to Breezewood and I filled the truck up with fuel and I waited in line for a while. There's a Blue Beacon truck wash there and I got the trailer washed out finally, and I think it was about 6 p.m. when I made it here to Winchester, Virginia. And the load, it's a drop. It turned out to be a drop and hook here. I think I've been to this place one other time. So it was a drop and hook here. So I do have, I did the drop and hook here. But they've got a parking area, a pretty good-sized parking area just outside their gate. And so I'm parking here, and I'm just going to go ahead and sleep here, particularly since I've kind of got my hours turned around backwards. Even though I woke up at 8:30 this morning and answered that message, then I laid back down and slept more. And it was probably 12:30 this morning, or 12:30 in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon, Central Time, before I finally got up. So, ended up kind of, as I say, it was just kind of a long weekend, a lot of sleeping and listening to different things, watching different things. I don't know. Kind of, whenever my sleeping hours get really screwed up, I find that I'm kind of out of whack. So, didn't really feel like recording a podcast, and so I just kind of skipped it. So, but in any case, I'll, when I go to bed here, once I get this podcast recorded and uploaded, once I go to bed here, then I'll set the alarm so that I don't want to sleep half the day away. I want to go ahead and probably set the alarm and try to, since I got so much sleep over the weekend, I'm going to try to, I should be able to get away with cutting back on my sleep a little bit. So that when I, that tomorrow night I'll be able to go to bed a little, kind of try to reverse it and start going to bed a little bit earlier. But of course, again, that's going to end up kind of being subject to whatever the next load is that they come up with. Now, the loads that they've been coming up with have been, they've been keeping me fairly busy, but they've been kind of shorter, or at least overnight type of loads, and those do end up kind of becoming a little bit demanding because you have more loading and unloading time, and as opposed to driving time. It's easier if you can keep if there's more driving time, if you can kind of think of it as a ratio. Driving time versus loading and unloading time. On a longer load, there's more driving time. It's a different ratio, a lower ratio between the amount of time having to spend docks waiting to load, and kind of getting the trailer ready, washing it out, blah blah blah, hanging out at docks to pick a load up and deliver a load. And if it's a load that's just short that has to, it's got to be there the next day typically, then, and sometimes in the same day even, then you're going to spend a lot more time. The ratio changes where there's not as much driving time, but there's more loading and unloading time and getting the trailer ready to go. Because a lot of those places want the trailer to be washed out and full of fuel and all that, and in some cases that can be a real pain in the rear depending on the depending on whether there's a truck stop around or a truck wash around, and then waiting in line at the truck wash and so on and so forth. Sometimes that can be a quick process, and other times it can be quite time consuming. But regardless, at least they are keeping me busy, and as long as I continue to about every 3 weeks, three and a half weeks, I take my 4 or 5 days off and just get completely away from the truck, I can kind of forget about it, and then I don't really care. As long as they keep me reasonably busy and as long as I'm able to pay my bills, what I'm doing really doesn't matter as much, quite frankly, even though some drivers will get all exercised and upset if they have to, if they've got a bunch of shorter loads as opposed to longer loads. But if the longer loads just aren't there, then they're not there. And so you have to be glad you can take what you can get. In any case, I spent the time listening to some different stuff, and especially stuff I'd collected podcast-wise on my computer, as opposed to the phone, because, of course, I have my list of podcasts that I collect on the phone. And actually, the podcast that I listen to, if you go to my Mevio website and you look me up on the Mevio website, if you go to I don't know exactly, you just have to poke around, and you can actually find my collections. I've got, like they call it collections on Mevio, and it's just collections of podcasts. You can actually find the RSS feed for the podcast, for the list of podcasts that I'm subscribed to, and that's what I plug that into my telephone, that Mevio list. I plug that into the telephone, into the podcast aggregator I have on my phone, and that's what I actually listen to on the phone. But otherwise, I've got some podcasts that I am subscribed to on my computer, and so, including the TED podcasts, I've got all of those, and I'm kind of trying to work my way through those to kind of clean the space back off of the hard drive. I'm kind of deleting those as I watch them, most of them. But in any case, Roy Masters, which I've mentioned him once in a while, FHU.com, F as in Frank, H as in Henry, U as in under.com. He's been on the radio for about 50 years, and I do subscribe to, he's got a podcast. You can actually find it in iTunes. If you just type in Roy Masters, you're going to, some stuff will come up, but you'll find his podcast. He's got a podcast in iTunes of his radio show. But it's on, it's like weeknights. It's Talk Radio Network. But in any case, periodically, I'll kind of listen in to him, and I don't make a big habit of listening to a bunch of his shows, but I do listen to once in a while, and he's come up with something that's because he's had this meditation exercise, and I've actually got, I've hosted the meditation exercise, his meditation exercise, on my website for quite a few years, for several years now, and but he actually came up with a almost like an innovation to it, and it's so simple, yet it amazed me, and it's probably just listening, because I listened to several of his shows, particularly today, and it sounds like it's really kind of amazed quite a few of the, just different listener people that have been listening to him for a long time. Because the traditional meditation exercise that he's taught, basically he tells you to close your eyes and kind of become aware of your hand, right hand, for example, and, shift, and become aware of your fingers, and then begin to shift your attention between you know, one finger to the next, to the next, to the next, and just keep rotating that, you know, back and, you know, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, that type of thing. But what he's saying now, he's saying something kind of different. It's similar, but it's kind of different. You close your eyes, which I'm doing right now. Just kind of, you know, just close your eyes and look at the inside of your eyelids. You know, and you can kind of look at the inside of your eyelids, and you can kind of see if, you know, and you don't squeeze or anything. You just kind of close your eyelids, and you can kind of see, it's almost like you're seeing little pixels kind of dancing around. You can just kind of see little pixels sort of dancing around. And what he is saying is that, you know, and I can't say it as eloquently as he can, but what he's saying is that those little, you know, the little pixels dancing around, you know, almost like, you know, you're looking out at, you know, little stars winking, the little pixels kind of dancing around, you know, sort of like little lights, or, you know, or just little bits of, almost like the snow that you see on a TV when it's tuned, you know, like an old analog TV when it was tuned to an empty channel, you'd see the snow. Well, sort of like, you know, the white noise, in other words. What he says is that is the energy that's coming, you know, that is basically programming, you know, that's, in other words, for lack of better language, that's the energy coming from God that kind of, you know, to kind of program your body, program your brain, program your body. And so, you know, you sit there with, you just, and I'm doing it right now, close your eyes, look at the inside of your eyelids, and you can kind of see the, you know, the snow or whatever, you know, pixels, whatever you want to call it, and then become aware of your hand. You know, it could be your left hand or your right hand. Since I'm holding the microphone with my right hand, I'm going to just kind of dangle my left hand down to my side. And then with the, you know, looking at those little pixels, you know, the little snow that I see on the inside of my eyelids, just kind of become aware of the index finger on my left hand. Just not really, you know, just enough to, if you just kind of aware that it's there, and it'll tingle a little bit. Like you're making, you know, like it's tingling with that, with those pixels, with that white noise. And then shift your attention to the second finger. Become aware of it. Just be aware that it's there. It tingles. And then you shift your attention to the next finger. And just become aware of it, and it tingles. And then little finger. And then it tingles, and then so on and so forth. You know, just continue to rotate that. And that's, but that, you know, because before, you know, he kind of, you know, if you've listened to the meditation that's on my website before, that came from him, that he, you know, he was saying not to look with your eyes, but, you know, sort of like in the middle of your forehead, it makes it so much easier if, you know, you just look at the inside of your eyelids, you know, and then you can just kind of see the, you know, because you do sort of see it, it's like a white noise, almost. And, you know, and the other thing that, you know, I've never mentioned this before, but, you know, there have been times when, you know, I thought, well, this is just kind of a weird little phenomenon. I didn't know, you know, didn't really think much about it, you know, other than, you know, I knew that it existed. At least it did for me. But, you know, it could be laying, particularly, you know, like in my truck or even at home and wherever. But laying in bed in the dark, you know, kind of cover my eyes up, you know, because sometimes in the day, you know, I have to sleep in the daytime, and even though I put a curtain up on the truck, it can still be kind of daylight in the truck, and so sometimes I'll take a, you know, take like a coat or something, like the arm of a heavy coat, and kind of, you know, put over my face so it kind of, you know, sort of simulates the darkness, you know, so put something over my eyes so that I can be in the dark, you know, and sometimes I've even done that at night. But, you know, one thing that I've noticed is that I can have my eyes closed, you know, completely in the dark, and, you know, and I've tried it even, you know, even in the dark, covering up my eyes in the dark. If I move my hand in front of my face or anywhere about my body, I swear to God, I can actually see it. I can actually see something. And so, you know, and I've noticed that for a long time. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, I don't know what this phenomena is. Maybe it's just the power of suggestion, but I swear to God, I can see something. And so I was listening to one of his Roy Masters programs today, and I'll be darned if he was talking to this guy on the phone, and he was saying, well, just close your eyes, and if you move your hand, you can kind of tell, you know, you can kind of see it. Or if you put your hand behind your head, you can kind of see it, you know, just sort of an ethereal thing. And, you know, I kind of ran into that on my own, but here he was mentioning it. And, you know, so it was, but what he was telling this guy, you know, that he was talking to on the phone, on the radio, you know, he's talking to him about closing his eyes and looking at the inside of his eyelids and, you know, kind of seeing the white noise. But then, you know, and then he was talking about the, you know, kind of being able to sort of see his body, you know, however that happens. And I don't know how that happens, but, you know, I swear that I can do that. And I've noticed, you know, and I have noticed that myself. He basically said that's your ethereal body, and that's the part that goes to heaven or hell. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. But you know, if you can just kind of practice, you know. And it's not something you have to, it's not really something intense or intensive, it's just, it's something that you need to practice at least once a day, preferably twice a day, or maybe, depending if you tend to get way stressed out, multiple times a day. Just, you know, you got a minute or two, close your eyes, and see the white noise on the inside of your eyelids. Become aware of that, and then kind of become aware of your hand, become aware of your fingers, just aware, and aware enough to where you're sort of directing that energy to your, you know, in this case to your fingers, and you sort of feel a tingle. And that's really, it's really simple, but yet it there's a magic all of its own, because you're doing something that no other animal can do. Because in a real sense, in a very real sense, you're sort of stepping back from your thoughts, back from the world of thoughts, and sort of into an awareness, you know, for, you know, and the language kind of falls apart at this point, but you're sort of just, the idea is just to be aware and kind of step back from your thoughts, back from the images in your mind, but back from your thoughts, and just kind of be aware of that white noise that you see on the inside of your eyelids, and be aware of your body, be aware of your hand. And that, you know, you practice that, as I say, you can. That's something that's simple. You can, you know, if you do it in the middle of the day, but certainly do it before you go to bed at night. Before the last, that's the last thing I do before I go to sleep, and it's also useful to do it, you know, when you get up, wake up in the morning, before you start your day, and it's something that you can do throughout the day. It's very useful. And the more you're able to practice that, the calmer that you can be as you go about your day, the more poised you are, the more, you know, if you meet a stressful situation, it's, you know, it sort of, how can I say that, sort of changes your, you know, the more you can practice that, in other words, it sort of helps to make you in the world but not of it. It's sort of, the more you can practice that, it sort of erects a sort of force field. You could almost think of it as sort of a force field. It sort of erects a sort of a force field around you. And even though you're in the world and you're participating in the world and you're interacting with people, etc., etc., it makes you increasingly immune to the stresses, you know, that are coming from the outside that you would normally get sucked into or end up becoming involved with, you know, and it also helps you to kind of look at yourself, step away, you know, kind of look at yourself, step away from your own resentments, etc., etc. And, you know, if you can kind of become aware and sort of separate from your thoughts, separate from resentment, so on and so forth, it sort of switches your polarity. Because, you know, when you resent, if you get, you know, and resentment is not anger. A lot of times it leads to anger. But when I say resentment, you know, I've described it as, you know, you're kind of like hurling this little mental thunderbolt. Like you may be smiling at somebody as you're carrying on a conversation, and you can resent them at the same time. And you can think of it as almost a, you know, like you're hurling the mental thunderbolt or a little electrical charge that happens. And you may be smiling when you do it, but it ends up poisoning your entire existence. That little charge, whatever resentment is, it ends up flipping. It's like it's flipping a polarity switch, and it's inviting the world in. And it ends up, the world ends up kind of infecting you, taking you over. And then some entity that's behind that, the entity that's sort of behind stress, ends up getting inside you, and then you think it's you. You think it's you that's that has all these different impulses. You know, impulse to eat, impulse to do this, impulse to do that. Even if you know better, you know, it's this, these impulses are there. But you think it's you, but it's not. And so the process of beginning to reverse that is to begin practicing this meditation that I just described. But you can go to my website, www.truckertompodcast.com, and up at the top, there's a link there that says meditation, and that'll take you to a page where you can actually, you know, you can download. There's about, I think there's 3 files that I have hosted on my server that came from Roy Masters, and you can actually download those and kind of practice that right there. in front of your computer, or you can copy them to CD or however you want to do it. Now, also, Roy Masters has started something new, and you can actually, he's got a phone number you can actually call. And I think, I haven't tried it, but I've heard him, you know, he's been advertising it a little bit. It's 206-315-4836. And I believe what it is a recording of this meditation that I just described. And so I'm going to have to try calling that and see what it is. But he's been, I think that's something they've came up with in the past couple of weeks. So, but it's very important if you know, for as many people as possible to begin to become aware of what's going on, or sort of become aware of the fact that they're, you know, not in charge of themselves, sort of begin to separate from you know, begin the process of being in the world but not of the world. Because, you know, quite frankly, we're moving into a very critical time. And the at this point, I believe that, you know, and I've been saying this for a while, but I think that at this point we've lost the United States of America. We've lost control of the government. The government is now, we voted in communists in the, you know, in the form of the Democrat Party. They're communists. You know, you can jump up and down and scream and say, well, you're calling them names. No, I'm not. I'm just calling them what they are. They're communists. And you can say, you know, you can try calling it socialism or whatever, but it's the bottom line, it's communism. And of course, that thrives on as many people as possible being separated from their own common sense, being separated from God, being disconnected from God, and then sort of programmed from the outside. And so we have at this point, we've got a communist dictatorship. In, you know, in fledgling dictatorship in the Democrat Party that's in charge of the, you know, they're in charge of both houses of Congress plus the presidency. But there's a window of opportunity. There's a small window of opportunity where if enough people rise up, everyday garden variety people that have been kind of sitting on the sidelines, if enough people rise up, we can take control of the situation and reverse it. But if, you know, if there are too many people that end up just kind of sitting on their hands and they think, well, I don't want to rock the boat, and just go along to get along, well, it's just a matter of time, and a short matter of time, before it's completely irreversible. The world, you know, civilization is probably going to end. It's the culmination is going to be that civilization plunges into a new dark age. Because if the United States of America plunges into a dark age, then, you know, the whole world, as goes the United States, goes the whole world. And don't think it can't happen. It's probably, if the truth was known, it's probably happened in the past more than once. How would we know? How do we know that we're the only civilization, the only quote-unquote advanced civilization that's ever been on the earth? We don't. we don't have a clue. We've got so many thousands of years of recorded history, but otherwise we don't know. We don't have a clue. There have been entire civilizations that have came and gone. You know, so it's time for all of us to, you know, as many of us as possible, to sort of pull our heads out of our asses and begin to, you know, exercise our freedom of speech while we still have it, because it may be gone in 6 months. It may be gone. 6 months from now, it could be gone. No more freedom of speech. You're only free to say what they're telling you. You know, whatever's approved. As long as you agree with them, then you're free to say whatever you think. As long as what you say agrees with them, or think what is what agrees with the prevailing whatever's politically correct, in other words. And that may be just 6 months away. No more freedom of speech. You want to live in a country like that? You want to live in a world like that? So it's time to get off your ass and start exercising your freedom of speech. You know, and I know there are a lot of people that are afraid, oh, I might lose my job if I say too much. Well, risk it, because you're going to lose a goddamn thing anyway. You're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your... You know, unless you're one of the people that thinks they're privileged, you know, and if you kowtow to the communists, maybe you can kind of get curry favor with them. But you're going to lose it anyway. So you might as well stand up right now while you can, and tell them, you know, and put a stop to it, protest, whatever it is that you can do, you should be doing it now. Because if you wait 6 months from now, you won't have a chance to say it. You very well may not have, because it'll be gone. So, anyway, I've got some news stories here that I thought were kind of interesting. Let's see here. Still looking here. This was kind of interesting. This is from Boston.com. Kennedy should resign. Running for re-election in 1982, Senator Ted Kennedy aired a series of sentimental television ads in which longtime supporters spoke of him as an empathetic human being who was no stranger to suffering and sorrow. One of those supporters was 83-year-old Frank Manning, founder of Massachusetts Association of Older Americans. "He's not a plaster saint, but he's not without his faults," Manning said in the ad. "But we wouldn't want a plaster saint." I didn't vote for Kennedy in 1992. Now, this is the author of this article, Jeff Jacoby, talking. "I didn't vote for Kennedy in 1982 or any other year, and I have certainly never thought of him as a saint, plaster, or otherwise. Play-to-win politics, not piety, has been the essence of his long career in the Senate. He has a gift for the poignant gesture. There is no denying he is a deft hand at evoking the attention of his many admirers, but beneath the tug at the heartstrings..." Let me make that so that the motor starts. I don't have to listen to that beep. "But beneath the tug of the heartstrings, there is always a shrewd political calculation. Today, Kennedy is gravely ill with brain cancer, but his political instincts are as sharp as ever. Given his condition, the letter he sent to Massachusetts political leaders last week could not help but generate a fresh wave of sympathy. I am now writing to you, it reads, about an issue that concerns me deeply, the continuity of representation for Massachusetts should a vacancy occur. As a human being, Kennedy is surely grateful for that sympathy. As a canny political navigator, he reckons it may provide the cover needed to change Massachusetts law to benefit his party. Kennedy wants the legislature to upend the secession law it passed in 2004, when, at his urging, it stripped away the governor's longstanding power to temporarily fill a Senate vacancy. Back then, John Kerry was a presidential candidate and Republican Mitt Romney was governor. Kennedy lobbied state Democrats to change the law so that Romney couldn't name Kerry's successor. They followed his advice with gusto. When the final vote took place, the Boston Globe reported, "Hooting and hollering broke out on the usually staid House floor," said House Speaker Thomas Finneran, acknowledged candidly, "It's a political deal. It's very raw politics." It still is, now that Massachusetts has a Democrat governor. Kennedy is lobbying to restore the gubernatorial power to name an interim appointee. That would guarantee Democrats in Washington two reliable Senate votes from Massachusetts, even if Kennedy isn't there to cast one of them. Needless to say, Kennedy's letter says nothing about raw politics. No, it's all lofty principle and good government. It's vital for the Commonwealth to have two voices speaking for the needs of the citizens, and two votes in the Senate during the approximately 5 months between a vacancy and an election, he writes. If Kennedy is sincere, if his chief concern is that Massachusetts not be left for months without the services of a full-time senator, then he should do the right thing right now. He should resign. For well over a year, Massachusetts has not had the two voices and two votes in the Senate that Kennedy says its voters are entitled to. Sickness has kept him away from Capitol Hill. For most of the last 15 months, he has missed all but a handful of the 270 roll calls taken in the Senate so far this year. Through no fault of his own, he is unable to carry out the job he was reelected to do in 2006. As a matter of integrity, he should bow out and allow his constituents to choose a replacement. Democrats are keenly feeling the absence of Ted Kennedy, reported the Politico from Washington last week. Senate Democrat insiders say there's been little contact with the Massachusetts Democrat recently. Though his staff tries to keep up appearances, it is clear that Kennedy is no longer an active participant in Senate business. Few things are harder for those accustomed to power than letting it go, but there is no honor in clinging to the office till the bitter end. Senator Kerry told ABC the other day that his colleague doesn't believe that under any circumstances, now or ever, Massachusetts should have anything less than full representation in the United States Senate. It has less than full representation, much less right now. That is why, for the sake of the state and the Senate he loves, Edward Kennedy should step down. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Colorado Springs police may sell seized firearms. The city council is considering a program to let the police department sell confiscated guns to licensed dealers. Sales could net $10,000 a year. Reporting from Colorado Springs, Colorado, this conservative city is taking an unusual, some might say extreme, step to try to stem its fiscal woes. It's entering the gun business. The Colorado Springs City Council is expected in coming weeks to approve the final details of a program that would allow the police department to sell confiscated firearms to federally licensed gun dealers. Police have already stopped melting down the hundreds of guns they collect from crime scenes, drug houses, or civilians who don't need them anymore. The sales are projected to bring in about $10,000 a year, only a slight dent for a city that faced a deficit of one quarter of its $200 million annual budget this year, but it still helps, said Vice Mayor Larry Small, who proposed the gun sales. "Every penny counts," Small said. Colorado Springs is home to the Army's Fort Carson. The Air Force Academy and NORAD, men and women in uniform, mingle easily with civilians in the shopping center's strollable downtown that sits in the shadow of 14,000-foot Pikes Peak, People here are comfortable around firearms, but even in Colorado Springs, the idea of law enforcement as gun sellers has raised some eyebrows. So this kind of goes on, but anyway, get the idea. This ought to get some people's attention. Millions face shrinking Social Security payments. Washington, millions of older people face shrinking Social Security next checks next year. The first time in a generation that payments would not rise. And basically what they're talking about, there's no, the cost of living increase, this time, there's not going to be one for whatever reason. There's not, this year, you know, for the last 10, 11, 12 years, there's been a cost of living adjustment that's continued to keep those checks going up a little bit. And this year, it hasn't, you know, because there's been some various factors, but they're saying, well, maybe it's energy costs or whatever, but it's not going to go up. And at the same time, the Medicare part is actually going to take more out, and so it's going to cause their checks to shrink. So that's going to be very interesting to see what happens when those people all of a sudden their checks all of a sudden start getting smaller. I think you're going to hear some real howling. Let's see here. I thought this was interesting too. This is from politicalticker.blogs.cnn. politicalticker.blogs.cnn.com. Senator, this is from, or this is Senator Lieberman. Jamming through healthcare, a real mistake. Washington. Pushing a healthcare reform package through Congress without significant Republican support would be a real mistake for President Barack Obama, Senator Joseph Lieberman warned Sunday. Lieberman, an independent who caucuses with Democrats, said trying to jam through, quote-unquote, a package that the public is either opposed to or of very, very passionate mixed minds about would be bad for the system. He added, frankly, it wouldn't be good for the Obama presidency. He has got other things to, other fights to fight, the senator from Connecticut told CNN's State of the Union, citing climate change, financial regulatory reform, and the war in Afghanistan. The warning from Lieberman, who supported Obama's opponent, Republican Senator John McCain, in last year's presidential election, came as some Democrats signaled increased willingness to consider ways to push through a plan. We prefer a bipartisan approach, Senator Chuckie Schumer, Democrat New York, told NBC's Meet the Press. Democrats led by Obama have bent over backwards to win support across the aisle, Schumer argued. But he said, we are now looking at the alternatives because it's looking less and less likely that the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate will want to go for a bipartisan bill. That's all nonsense because they have a majority. The Democrats have a majority. They don't need the Republicans, so there's no point. And the only reason they're trying to get the Republicans to come along is when the thing ends up blowing up in their face and they can say, oh, well, it was bipartisan. The Republicans did it too. You know, it's kind of like a little kid. Well, he did it too. You know, why did you do whatever it was? Well, the other kids are doing it. I want to do it. You know, that's same thing. So, but they can do it all themselves. Just do it. They got the votes. Do it. So, the tactics being considered, Schumer said, include getting a 60 Democrat votes and maybe occasional Republican here or Republican here or there. They include looking at reconciliation, which only needs 51, and they include a combination. In the spring, Democrats put a health care reconciliation into the 2010 budget. Reconciliation, a type of budget maneuver that requires only a simple majority, can pass with only 51 votes instead of the 60 needed to break a filibuster. The possibility of resorting to such a maneuver infuriates some Republicans. This is really sort of denying democracy. Republican Paul Ryan of Wisconsin told Fox News Sunday Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican Utah, told NBC it would be an abuse of the process. So this goes on. So anyway, get the idea. Okay, that we had a little mishap there with Ubercaster. It's an audio engine overload. I don't know why it did that, but so anyway, I closed some other programs, and hopefully it will work long enough for me to get this podcast finished. The thrill is gone for Obama and the media. There's nothing like a summer vacation to rekindle a romance. So maybe a week on Martha's Vineyard can bring back some of the magic between Obama, the Obama administration, and the media. Before White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs left town, Baghdad Bob Gibbs left town, he tried to clarify President Barack Obama's commitment that everybody in Washington gets all wee-weed up. Gibbs explained to reporters that what the president meant was that they were a bunch of bedwetters who made too much out of the implosion at the White House health care strategy. Gibbs has grown more sardonic and patronizing as the summer wears on and Obama's poll numbers wilt. The press secretary has lectured reporters on the nature of their jobs, apparently to defend the administration against misinformation rather than asking impertinent questions like, how will you pay for it? When asked recently about the administration's endless evasions of on the public option, Gibbs instead opted to define a monopoly. If you had one place to eat lunch before you came to the briefing, do you think it would be cheap? Gibbs demanded of CNN's Ed Henry. Henry should have asked Gibbs to define monopsony, a market in which one buyer is so large that it can control suppliers and ruin competitors. Henry could then explain he'd rather pay too much for the sandwich he wanted than have to eat at a government chow line opened across the street to encourage competition. Gibbs is so crabby because, incredibly, the administration blames the media for the president's problems. It tried blaming Republicans, but the GOP is too far out of power. When the leader of the free world is complaining about a posting on the former governor of Alaska's Facebook page, he's got problems. Team Obama tried blaming special interests, but that was a bust too. The president's deal with the pharmaceutical industry gets him $150 million worth of ads to boost his plan, whatever it is. The same people who bombard us with ads for products that promise to prevent hardened arteries or encourage hardening elsewhere will soon be selling you Obamacare. If you experience doubts about the plan lasting for more than 4 hours, seek immediate help from the Organizing for America. Democrats tried to blaming the mobs of un-American protesters and evil mongers who were giving raspberries to members of Congress at town halls. That flopped too, leaving the administration to blame the messenger. And one can understand why Gibbs would be a bit shocked by the slightly less accommodating tone of the media. Reporters who traveled with the Obama campaign tell horror stories about the organization, dishonesty, rudeness, and abysmal access, but those reporters still served up the glowing coverage. Obama was the hottest news story of their generation. Rather than covering the long-shot freshman senator who would be crushed in February, Obama campaign reporters experienced the reflected glory of being along for an historic journey. There was plenty of motivation to keep that journey going. Conversely, Obama making a hash out of health care provides plenty of good copy for the White House press corps. And because Obama fatigue has set in with the reading and viewing public, skeptical stories match the national mood. Some are still in the tank for Obama, but many liberal reporters think the president is blowing the left's big chance. I hope so. I hope they're right. And talking about how everything has got so wee-weed up, that's really presidential. What a presidential phrase that is. Obama observed that in August of 2008, the media predicted doom because John McCain began to close the gap after picking Sarah Palin. In trying to explain that the president was talking about media incontinence, Gibbs referred to August and September of 2007, when most predicted Hillary Clinton would roll to victory in Iowa. So not only are Obama and his people still reliving the campaign, they're drawing the wrong lessons from it. At this point in 2007, Obama was coming up in the polls, making Iowa a three-way race with Clinton and John Edwards. Now the president's numbers are sinking. And if the trend line in the late summer of 2008 had held, Obama would have lost. It took a tsunami of bad economic news and the McCain campaign's mishandling of it to put Obama back on top. But there is no opponent here other than public opinion and no finish line other than the end of his term, with only the steady breeze of favorable coverage of a typical Democrat president instead of the gale of resolve, positive gale of positive press that once helped drive Obama to victory, it's going to be a very long journey. Chris Steierwalt, the Examiner's political editor, can be contacted. Okay, and that's the end of the article. So, anyway, that's kind of interesting. See, large Texas bank shut down by federal regulators, so there's more banks that are being closed down. New images show healthier Fidel Castro. Girl dies after being swept into water. A young girl from New York was killed Sunday when a huge wave swept her and other visitors into the water off Acadia National Park. A quote-unquote rogue wave hit about 20 people who were standing on the platform at Thunder Hole, according to the U.S. Coast Guard, one of several agencies involved in the incident. Three people were plucked from the water by a lifeboat crew, including a girl who had no vital signs, according to the Coast Guard. The girl, who was 7, died and her parents were injured, according to Stephen McCausland, spokesman for the Maine Department of Public Safety. He said the family was from New York but had no further information about them this evening. Another 9 people were taken to the hospital, according to the Coast Guard. 2 others were feared to be missing earlier in the day, but it was later determined that everyone was accounted for, according to the petty officer James Rhodes. The large waves hit Thunder Hole as the combination of astoundingly high tide and a storm surge from Hurricane Bill created dangerous surf conditions along most of Maine's coast. Several York County beaches were closed to swimming as a result. Thunder Hole is a cavernous inlet where incoming waves striking rocks can produce a sound like that of a distant clap of thunder. Onlookers can walk down a set of stairs to a railed portion where they can look down into the cave. Hurricane Bill passed about 300 miles to the southeast of Portland. That would be Portland, Maine, Epiphel said, but created enough of a storm surge to worry officials. A surf advisory posted Saturday was due to expire tonight. Several towns in York County closed their beaches to swimming on Sunday. Red flags were posted on all the beaches in Biddleford, Kennebunk, Old Orchard Beach, Ogunquit, Saco Wells in York. Access to Camp Ellis in Saco was restricted, police said. In Scarborough, police said Higgins Beach and Scarborough Beach, a town-owned beach, remained open despite the storm surge. So, but that happens. You can have these rogue waves, so-called rogue waves, that just sort of come out of nowhere, and if you're in the wrong place right along the beach, you can be swept, you know, you can just be swept out to sea. You know, so it can happen. You know, so it's kind of a dangerous thing, and it's particularly, you know, they're talking about storm surges and so on and so forth, so that it wasn't as if they knew that it that there wasn't a problem, you know, because they'd closed some of those beaches. But wow, that's kind of amazing. So anyway, let's see if there's anything else. Well, here's something about the swine flu. Excuse me. Swine flu campaign waits on vaccine, and this is from the WashingtonPost.com. Government health officials are mobilizing to launch a massive swine flu vaccination campaign this fall that is unprecedented in its scope and the potential for complications. The campaign aims to vaccinate at least half the country's population within months, although more people have been inoculated against diseases such as smallpox and polio over a period of years, the United States has never tried to immunize so many so quickly. But even as scientists rush to test the vaccine to ensure it's safe and effective, the campaign is lagging. Officials say only about a third as much vaccine as they had been expecting by mid-October is likely to arrive by then, when a new wave of infections could be peaking. Among the unknown, how many shots will people will need, what the correct dosage should be, and how to avoid confusing the public with overlapping effort to combat the regular seasonal flu. To prepare, more than 2,800 local health departments have begun recruiting pediatricians, obstetricians, nurses, pharmacists, paramedics, and even dentists, along with a small army of volunteers from churches and other groups. They are devising strategies to reach children, teenagers, pregnant women, and young and middle-aged adults in inner cities, suburban enclaves, and the countryside. This is potentially the largest mass vaccination program in human history, said Howard Markle, a professor of medical history at the University of Michigan, who is advising the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as it spearheads the effort. Public health officials describe the effort as crucial to defend against the second wave of the Northern Hemisphere's first influenza pandemic in 41 years. As schools reopen, the number of cases could jump sharply within weeks, sparking a second wave of potentially far larger than the outbreak last spring. Although the swine flu appears to be no more dangerous than the typical seasonal flu, the new virus, known as H1N1, is likely to infect many more people because most have no immunity against it. The vaccine effort carries political risks for the Obama administration. If the outbreak fizzles, they will be susceptible to being criticized for spending billions of dollars, said Harvey V. Feinberg, president of the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, which advises Congress about medical issues. On the other hand, if this outbreak is early and severe, and there isn't enough vaccine, they'll be criticized for under-preparation. Officials stress that they are proceeding cautiously. A final decision to move forward will not be made until they get the results of clinical trials, testing to determine safety and dosing, and assess the virus's threat, but officials are confident the vaccine will pass muster and expect a campaign will be launched as soon as manufacturers deliver the first vials. There's little doubt we're going to vaccinate people, said Anthony S. Fossey of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, who is leading the government's testing of the vaccine. Who and when and exactly how, we have to figure out. The campaign is haunted by memories of government's ill-fated 1976 effort to vaccinate against swine flu. The epidemic fizzled, but the vaccine was given to 40 million people and blamed for causing a rare paralyzing disorder known as Guillain-Barré syndrome. Another wild card will be whether the vaccine will be delivered with an adjuvant To boost its effectiveness or stretch limited supplies into more doses, adjuvants have been used in Europe, but the Food and Drug Administration has not authorized their use in the United States. This is an overreaction, said Barbara Lowe Fisher of the National Vaccine Information Center, which opposes many vaccine policies. There is no national security threat here. Why are we operating like this? This is not polio. This is not smallpox. Fears and misinformation about the vaccines are circulating, including inaccurate claims that they will be mandatory. I'm very concerned about the dangers of vaccines, said Janet Smith, 58, of Mishawaka, Indiana. They misspelled Mishawaka. Who attended a public hearing August 15, one of the series of meetings the CDC has sponsored to gauge public sentiment about the vaccine. Authorities are adamant that vaccination will be voluntary, and they say there is no reason to think the vaccine will be any less safe than the usual flu vaccine. An adjuvant will be used only if necessary and proven safe, they say. To address concerns of pregnant women and parents with young children, some vaccine is being produced without a mercury additive. And because the short-term studies can identify only common immediate side effects, the CDC will step up monitoring for rarer serious complications such as Guillain-Barre. We're putting into place systems that are as good as we can have to identify problems quickly if they do occur, CDC Director Thomas R. Friedan said. On Friday, officials reported that no red flags regarding safety had emerged in the clinical trials. We are continuing oversight on the quality and safety of the vaccine being produced and the production process itself, said Jesse Goodman of the FDA. That's going well so far, but our oversight is continuing. In the meantime, local officials are drafting plans tailored to their communities. The shots in the arms and squirts up the nose will happen in schools, medical offices, hospitals, public health clinics, workplaces, drug stores, and at mass vaccination events, possibly including drive-through clinics in parking lots where people would stick their arms out of their car windows for a stab. It is clearly what we would call an all-hands-on-deck, said James Blumenstock of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. We're not starting from scratch. We don't have everything on the shelf that we can just pull off and put in place. It's a full court press and moving forward to have everything in place when we're ready to go. In Maryland, officials estimate that 2.9 million people fall into the priority groups for vaccine. Virginia estimates the number at 2.5 million and the district at 225,000. The national total is about 159 million people. Public health departments have suffered from decades of neglect and are now facing a physical crisis in many places where they have had to lay off staff or furlough staff or freeze hiring, Friedan said. So H1N1 has not come at a particularly good time. Setting priorities for delivering the vaccines will bring other complications. The elderly, usually first in line for flu shots, will not be this time because they seem more resistant to the virus, but they remain a top priority for the seasonal flu shots. Schools are considering giving shots to children, are making plans to get permission from parents and have to determine how best to line up anxious, rambunctious students. Everyone who gets a swine flu shot may need a booster several weeks later, potentially causing mix-ups about who gets which shot when. But Friedan and other outside observers expressed confidence that the program would be safe and successful. The federal government has spent close to $2 billion to buy up 195 million doses of vaccine and adjuvant, including the standard shots and the newer flu mist nasal spray vaccine made by MedImmune of Gaithersburg. The government is prepared to buy enough to vaccinate every person, 600 million doses altogether, if the pandemic or demand warrants it. That could increase the cost to $5 billion for the vaccine alone. It would cost at least $9 billion to administer the vaccine to the entire population, according to the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. Although five companies are racing to produce as much vaccine as possible, the first batches are not expected for 2 months, in part because the virus grew at about half the projected rate. Production appears to be increasing, but the 45 million to 52 million doses, about a third of what officials were anticipating, won't be ready until mid-October, with about 20 million doses a week expected after that to continue the campaign through the winter. Experts are uncertain whether they will face a shortage of vaccine because of high demand, or will have plenty of vaccine but little interest. People's enthusiasm will depend largely on what they see happening around them, Fauci said. If we get into the fall season and we don't see an explosion of cases, people will be less enthusiastic. If they see a lot of young people and kids getting sick, people will be very enthusiastic about getting vaccinated. The CDC is formulating a $4.8 million multimedia campaign to encourage people to get vaccinated and to help alleviate concerns and confusion, including radio and television, public service announcements, print ads, and messages delivered via Twitter, RSS feeds, and video podcasts on YouTube. They're calling it video podcasts on YouTube. They don't even know what they're talking about. Although the vaccine will be free, providers could charge about $15 to administer it, a fee that will be covered by Medicare and many health insurance plans. Experts also worry the swine flu will divert attention from the seasonal flu, which can cause serious illness. Officials will launch the seasonal flu vaccine campaign September 10th, about a month early, in hopes of vaccinating as many people as possible before the swine flu campaign. The more people who get both vaccines, the less likely the swine flu virus will mingle with one of the others to produce a more dangerous mutant. We really don't want those ugly viruses mixing together, said Kim Elliott of the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit research and advocacy group. So, there you go. I don't know. I don't go for those. So, you know, whatever happens, happens. So, anyway, probably better be bringing this to a close. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Hope you have a great week coming up. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.